Hello friends, this is the Yarra River Keeper podcast, recording on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation. I'm Katrina. In this four-part series, we will bring you stories of the friends groups that care for and protect the Gardiners Creek Kuyongkut catchment. In the fourth and final episode, we'll hear from Graham about how he brought together 21 friends groups and the hopes of what Kuyongkut Alliance can achieve for Gardiners Creek. Today we're here with Graham Ross, the convener of Kuyongkut Alliance. Graham, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, I suppose my story is I was born and brought up in Scotland and moved here about 26 years ago. My experience in Scotland was seeing how the biodiversity had changed dramatically over the centuries. Losing megafauna, bears, wolves,
wow.
Some really big extinctions being driven out, coming to Australia and seeing that what amazing flora and fauna existed here, and thinking, having driven from Melbourne to Sydney a long weekend, seeing that a lot of biodiversity was being lost, and I was really shocked to see so much clearing happen that I felt that we needed to do something. I was working and my time was limited, but I did start to go down to the local creek, which was Back Creek, and started to, I suppose, self-teach some revegetation, clearing weeds and looking at plants, engaging with locals and the council. Started doing some revegetation with the local scout group and joined the local friends group. And I suppose from there, it's been from a very micro exposure to the creek and biodiversity. It's now grown to looking further afield and seeing that my part of the creek was part of a bigger system. That bigger system was Gardiners Creek, but just not Gardiners Creek, but Scotchman's Creek, Back Creek, and Damper Creek, and also the catchment that surrounds those areas. So it's grown from being micro to a little bit more macro and certainly more regional. And in terms of the lack of care and love of Gardiners Creek, that led me to realise that it was a very degraded ecosystem and that it needed a coordinated attempt to try and restore or heal that waterway. So that led me to think about how best we could engage the four different councils in Melbourne Water to get more involved and to look at more of a holistic plan. And that thought was to try and bring together a number of groups from along the creek. And I thought maybe there were four or five friends groups. So I was amazed to find out that there were basically 21 groups who were involved in revegetation throughout the creek. That was a revelation in itself. And I managed through COVID and a lot of help from the Yarra Riverkeeper through Andrew Kelly at the time to set up a Zoom meeting, to which a large number of those groups attended. We had speakers from Damper Creek, also from Mini Ponds and from Living Links, all these different groups who'd set up creek-wide committees. And from that, the groups grew and we became incorporated this year. We've put a number of grant applications for things like litter traps and for revegetation, major revegetation projects. So we've grown from strength to strength, and we've also been a critical part of a wider regional collaboration, which has involved all the councils. There are five councils, four of whom have got real buy-in. Glenira have only got small drains, which don't really have a big impact on the creek. But Melbourne Water, Deakin University, Holmes Glen College, all these important stakeholders are part of a wider regional collaboration. We've timed it perfectly, I think, in terms of motivating our group to make sure that community is embedded in any structure going forward, the governance structure. So that's, I suppose, where we are at the moment. We're in a pretty happy place, but the creek is still suffering a lot of degradation, and there are still areas where a recent development of Burwood Brickworks has led to the developer paying an offset to Melbourne Water to pollute the creek, paying $250,000 to Melbourne Water. And we objected to that and brought a number of other stakeholders along to us. So we very much see ourselves as a smaller version of the Riverkeeper, in terms of we're there to protect and to heal the creek, and we're there to fight for it. We're more advocates than fighters. We think we can be just as effective.
That sounds amazing. You mentioned you started off small in
Back Creek. It's for the small tributaries. And again, it's one of these ones that's been barreled, and there are the little pockets of biodiversity in different areas, South Surrey Park, and there's probably two or three friends groups that operate down that creek. Degraded as it is, it still offers an important biodiversity corridor. And, you know, I was working on Back Creek just the other day, and eight gang cockatoos flew past, and of course they've recently been listed as endangered. So it's great to think that you know, even in an urban environment, it plays such a critical role in, mm-hmm. in preserving biodiversity. We think of, you know, the forests as being really important, which they are, but, you know, the urban environment properly managed can provide a refuge for these animals as well.
Yeah, that's really nice to hear that, that story. When did you start your journey in the revegetation? You said you started small.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose for me it was, I had quite a reasonably stressful job in a very different field. I was in commercial property. And for me, waking up early on a Saturday morning before the kids are up and things, I would just go down the creek, pull weeds and, you know, have a bit of a workout down there in terms of a bit of physical exercise and just enjoying the environment that it had, the biodiversity and the flora and fauna. And meeting people as well, meeting local people and being part of a community. So that was probably about 20 years ago. And I say that then developed into we have, as time allowed, to get more formally involved. As my kids joined the Scouts, we got them involved and were involved in Clean Up Australia Day along Gardner's Creek. Things like that evolved as part of sort of family events as well.
So did you start up a friends group of your own?
I joined a friends group early on and decided that wasn't... And again, the key thing with Gardner's Creek is there's so many different friends groups. There's the Urban Gorillas, who I think you've spoken to, and you know, they offer that sort of youth element. And a lot of the other groups have got different dynamics as well. So there's a friends group that would suit, I think, pretty much anyone and everyone. And I think offering that flexibility is really important.
Yeah, thank you. It's been really great to hear what you've done so far on your journey towards Kuyongkut Alliance. What would you say your hopes are for going forward for Kuyongkut?
I really hope that we've come together as a group, we've become incorporated, we've got a really strong team, we work really well with Yarra Riverkeeper as well, they've been really supportive. And I suppose it's building those alliances and increasing that voice. And I think there's a real opportunity to try and make sure that the other stakeholders, such as the councils and Melbourne Water, see there's a potential legacy project in Gardner's Creek. There's a lot to be done, and business as usual is not going to produce a lasting legacy for the creek. And we've got to be bold in terms of our vision for it, and we've got to get councils and Melbourne Water to be bold in terms of their vision and really approach it as a strategic, holistic plan for the long term. The impacts of climate change are going to be quite challenging, to say the least. So we've got to make sure that our waterways and our biodiversity areas are as strong as possible, to be as resilient as possible to withstand those challenges that we've got. And you know, the multiple benefits it brings, not just to the flora and fauna, but to us in terms of mental health, physical health, clean air, helping ameliorate heat island effect as well. So my hope is that others will see that vision in government. And to that end, we recently got a commitment from the state government for $250,000 towards a strategic plan. And other parts of the federal government have made various different pledges to the creek. It's a matter of making sure that the funds are directed in the right places. And there aren't just small projects put in constituencies for political gain. These are for the benefit of the water for the Kuyongkut.
Long-term benefit. Yeah. I was speaking to Megan, and she said that the plants that they are putting in the ground now, the trees, especially the big tall eucalypts, are for her great-grandchildren because the galahs and possums, the tree needs to be 100 plus years old in order to have the hollows.
That's right. Yep.
So it's amazing that
people are thinking 100 plus years in advance.
Maybe we can talk a bit about how you managed to get all these 21 friends group together, because I imagine that's quite a feat. I can't imagine what it's like.
Yeah, so to bring together the group was, it seemed daunting at first, and it took time to get the relevant contact details and speak to the right people. But the one thing about friends groups is that they live up to their name, and everyone's really keen to help. And one of the things I loved about the friends groups that we got is that nobody's a rival. Everyone works together for the greater good of the creek. So we managed to get together, I think, 10 or 12 of the different friends groups at that stage to join a Zoom meeting.
Okay.
So that was on Zoom. This is it all started in the middle of COVID, so the first COVID winter. So we managed to get together a large group, We managed to get different catchment management authorities from different creeks just to present on how they're managing their creeks. And as it grew from there, so we had our first on-site meeting at Deakin University, just in there, just at Gardner's Creek beside their grounds, and a bit of a picnic there.
Oh, nice.
I think that was in the December of 2020, and we've had a number of committee meetings since. So the engagement has been amazing, and we have it basically split between groups who want to be more actively involved, and some of the friends groups are a bit smaller, and they're happy just to be kept in the loop as to what's happening. So it's not trying to burden people, it's letting people devote as much time as they fit in their busy schedule.
Yeah.
And as the group have grown, so the number of people who wanted to get involved have seen value in what we're doing, and we're certainly becoming stronger by the day, which is exciting.
Yeah, it's been really lovely doing this podcast and learning everyone's different stories. Some are quite new, especially Sam and Richard's girls. But then hearing Megan's story since before I was born, it's amazing that a friends group made it. It was once just paddocks or horse adjustment, which I'm not 100% sure what that means. that she, like, her friends group converted it to this amazing, beautiful corridor that I assumed was always that way.
Yeah, and I think one thing that I think the public don't realise is how much hard work it takes to create good biodiversity and to maintain it and to keep the weeds at bay and to the plant identification. That's one of the hardest things. And without friends groups there to do that work, the council don't have the resources to do that level of management on that scale. So the friends groups provide an amazing resource for council and for the public. I think there was a survey done as part of Boroondara's climate action plan, and I think 96% of respondents said that the waterways and creeks were fairly to very important for them, and 75% thought that they were well serviced in terms of biodiversity and flora and fauna, which isn't quite probably the truth, but that's public's perception. But it's all about education as well, and that's another role that I think both the Kuyongkut and the friends groups and advisory groups have is education and passing on knowledge.
Yeah.
And trying to build links as well with traditional owners. That's an increasingly important part. And that's certainly something that's a core part of what we're looking to do is the Kuyongkut Alliance.
Yeah, yes. It's going to take a lot of effort. But I think it's worth it, and we sort of owe it to the traditional owners of this land to do the work.
No, we do. We do. We've got a lot to be thankful for the way they did care for country, and they continue to care for country. I did a conservation land management course as part of my transition to get more involved in the environment, and one of the key elements there is looking at traditional burns and how they're carried out, and you know, just the subtleties of them in terms of that they would know at a certain time of the year when to burn, which animals were nesting and had young. Crazy things like they would know in the morning if they set the fire in one particular, with the wind blowing in one direction, that in the afternoon there would be a wind change and the fire would get blown back across where it came from and effectively be extinguished. So all this knowledge, rather than just, you know, going in the flamethrower, and it doesn't really care for country like the way the Aboriginal people do.
Yeah, it's important to acknowledge, and not just acknowledge, but value that although it might be very different to how we're used to doing things, there's a purpose behind doing things at a slower pace or differently and not using accelerants.
No, that's right. We've got to learn to, in my view, live a bit more slowly and a bit more cleanly and care for country.
Yes, absolutely, because we are nothing without land and we need food to survive, and our food is grown from the land, so we need to take care of the land.
Yeah, it's 100%.
All right, so if there's, I'm sure after listening to all these stories, people listening would be intrigued in how to find out more about Kuyongkut. How could our listeners learn more?
Well, there is a link on the Yarra River Keeper website, Kuyongkut Alliance. We're actually applying for a grant at the moment to try and get our own websites. I'd be more than happy for anyone to go through the website, contact me, and I'd be more than happy to let them know a bit more about the group and how they might potentially get involved. And the key thing is linking through to the key people in this are the existing friends groups. We're only here as a bit of a medium for the strategic plan. Mm-hmm. But there are so many different friends groups, so many good people out there, and they would be very welcoming for any new members.
Hmm. I recently did a planting, and it was so satisfying to just be on the ground, having direct, immediate impact, knowing that in just 3 hours, I put plants in the ground, and those plants, the roots will stabilize the soil and create ecosystem for microbes under the ground, but also the foliage would provide food and habitat for invertebrates, insects, and then, as I learned from Sam, lizards and birds will be attracted. So just a few plants can create so much life. So I encourage everyone listening to join your local friends group and create biodiversity, and just you alone can create beautiful homes.
Creating a legacy. I think everyone that goes out there, plants a tree, you're creating a legacy for the future.
Yeah.
It's one of the joys I have is when I cycle through Gardner's Creek. Along Gardner's Creek is seeing trees that I planted 4 or 5 years ago, which are now 30 feet high.
Yeah.
In Scotland, you plant a tree, it takes 10 years to get to 6 feet high. But in Australia, the conditions are amazing. And nature does need our help. There's a plant called Berseria spinosa, which we think is going to become locally extinct because the temperatures, it needs low temperatures, not necessarily freezing, but really low temperatures to germinate. And certainly in the area of it around Melbourne, within 10, 12 kilometres, we're just not getting temperatures going down low enough, partly because of heat island effect, partly because of climate change. And the fear that Berseria spinosa won't be able to regenerate itself going forward. So that's kind of an indication of how things are changing. So it's important that we get out there and give flora and fauna the best chance possible. And, you know, the effects on mental health are very well known. The positive impacts of going out there, communicating with other people, getting your hands dirty. You know, you can sit at home and worry about things, but it's a great way to do something positive and being part of the solution.
That's a great way to wrap it up. Thanks for your time, Graham.
Yeah, it's lovely to chat. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. Thank you.
Thanks.